For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics, along with Republican political consultant Neva Hill and ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel. Tempers are growing at the state capitol. The gubernatorial nomination of Mike Mazie for budget secretary stalls after a row in the Appropriations Committee. Also, Republican senators are concerned they're giving too much power to the Governor Stitt over agencies, as lawmakers are getting told they can't meet with department heads without the presence of someone from the governor's office. Neva, is the honeymoon over?
Well, I think it may be coming to a close. And I think what we're seeing, as we've talked about leading up to this part of the session, is this is when everyone hopes the wheels don't come off, but it looks like this week we had a little bit of that take place. 2.5 hours, I mean, it was a number of very heated exchanges, ultimately ended with them going to lunch, and then a memo came out during the lunch hour that we're not coming back, and to be continued. So I think many of the issues that the senators were expressing, the questions they were asking, were very legitimate, and I think it became more combative just because of the tone that was given in the exchange, and that was unfortunate. And I think what we have now is a situation where it's raised a lot of other questions and issues that will all be infused into this budget negotiating process that is hot and heavy right now this week, and will move into next week and on through till maybe the end of the month. I mean, the notion that there was a possibility of getting out early before the last day of May now seems to be a lot less conversation about that in the halls of the Capitol this week as a result of some of these actions.
Ryan.
Well, let's start with what's normal. What's normal is at this point in the legislative session, everybody's, you know, got a short fuse.
It's tired.
Tired. You know, there's a lot of deals that are being made. Things are moving very fast. People are anxious. So this is not the best time of the year to have, contentious issues arise that aren't already in the mix. What's not normal is in these Senate confirmation hearings, they're usually pretty pro forma. Tell us about yourself, tell us about your family, and they...
Or just make a statement.
Usually make a statement, and that's that. And they do the confirmation, and they're done. So this is kind of a new situation for the Oklahoma State Senate, to have this kind of a contentious confirmation hearing. All of this is happening in the backdrop of a couple of things. One, budget negotiations have all but fallen apart right now, of what we're hearing. And so, you know, Neva says the wheels have come off. It looks like the wheels have come off. Early adjournment is probably not on the table right now, and if it is, it's going to be a week at best. Mm-hmm. And then second, you've got this new fight over the fight between the legislature and the executive branch. And a lot of times, you know, when we're looking at these agency heads, even though the agency heads are ultimately part of the executive branch, before legislation passed this year, I think a lot of agency heads felt that they represented the agency and not the executive branch. And now they're being asked to represent the executive branch in its entirety. And that's a new dynamic. And I think that the legislature is right to push back on that, because they don't want to give up too much. Governor Stitt has been very good at asserting the executive power. And if the legislature doesn't push back some, there's going to be an imbalance there.
And the other problem is that there are so many nominations because of this new law, because now I'm seeing lists miles long of nominations that are going on every day in committee, on the Senate floor. And after a while, I think someone would stand up and go, this is just ridiculous.
Well, and I think it's important to remember, there are always a large number of Senate confirmations that take place every session. I think the issue at hand with this particular nominee and his role as the newly created finance cabinet position is that he is one of the key players in the budget negotiations, and certainly is someone who, frankly, it has mixed reviews among some of his former colleagues. He was a state senator.
He was the finance chairman.
And finance chairman. So he has a point of view that he is that he's bringing now to the confirmation process that frankly kind of rubbed a lot of these folks clearly the wrong way by many of the comments that took place during the committee hearing. So I think we have a situation where it does give pause to the governor and his executive team, that while they are clearly making seismic changes in how they want to construct and help move their agenda forward, that they also must play well with the legislators. And I think that this was kind of a wake-up call for some of these folks to understand that if you want to send memos, if you want to make directives, if you want to kind of change what business has, the way it has been done in the past, as Ryan said, in terms of the agency heads, a senator picking up a phone call, wanting to have information and then being told, no, I have to have other people in that process, it's something that they're going to have to work through and see what's going to happen in the future.
Criminal justice advocates are raising concerns about a former lawmaker on Governor Stitt's team when current Secretary of State Legal Counsel, State's Legal Counsel Tim Downing was a state representative 2 years ago. He worked to negate provisions of State Question 780 passed by voters. Ryan, does Downing's presence in the negotiating room bother you?
Absolutely. I mean, Tim Downing has made a professional career out of carrying water for the district attorneys and their efforts to protect and champion the status quo in the criminal justice system. I think Governor Stitt and his team, by and large, have a real emphasis and commitment to, you know, real significant criminal justice reform, even this session. But at the end of the day, having somebody there at the table that has, you know, proven time and again, not only does he not support criminal justice reform efforts, but that he has actively worked to undermine them. I mean, he was one of the architects of the effort to repeal State Question 780, even though it passed by an overwhelming majority of the people. He was one of the group of folks that essentially said the voters weren't smart enough to know what they were doing, and so we need to help them out. And now this guy is in the room making critical decisions. And I know that the governor's office is saying, well, he's just one person at the table. But when you're the one person at the table, oftentimes that may be a lawyer that may have, you know, some experience in the criminal justice system, that gives you a really significant voice. And I don't know what the balance is to that. I don't know what the counterbalance to that in the governor's office is right now. And so it is concerning as we see this. I mean, we're at this historic moment where we have a marriage of political support outside of the Capitol building, political support within the Capitol building, and a golden age of think tanks from the far right to the far left that have come together to answer every question that lawmakers could have about criminal justice issues that they're looking at this year. And yet people like Tim Downing and the District Attorney's Council, a state-funded lobbying organization, are essentially still doing what they've always done, which is trying to work deals behind the scenes at the end of session to kill real reforms.
Neva.
I think we have to look at it and kind of step back and say, you know, here's someone who was a one-term state rep, now legal counsel for the Secretary of State, in the room, as you say, Ryan, but someone who, frankly, is just, he's in a holding pattern waiting to, he's a nominee of the Trump administration to become U.S. Attorney for the Western District, so he is not a long-term player. He certainly brings his bias and his background on the issue, but I think the overarching point that is significant is that the governor continues to reaffirm his position that he is going to be strongly supporting, and in fact, the five bills out there that there is great hope that they can still continue to marshal, you know, kind of marshal the forces and move through this legislative session and have him be able to sign, I think is significant. And I think the other point is that he and others are already talking about 2020 coming back in the next legislative session and doing a major overhaul of the criminal code. And I think, you know, I think what you said is correct. The stage is set, and the players are in place, and we're always going to have two sides to this debate still. It's never going to be a unanimous proposition, but I think in the context of where the legislature is right now, I think it's promising that we can see some of these reforms really become a reality.
The leader of the House taps a special counsel to investigate accusations against Oklahoma City Republican Representative Chris Kennedy. Sooner Tea Party co-founder Al Gerhardt claims Kennedy improperly touched two women, including a former member of the House. Neva, how seriously should we take these charges?
At this point, I think we just have to wait. But we have to, I think, first consider that the accusation is coming from someone who has a reputation of being just a Republican gadfly that likes to kind of toss these kind of political hand grenades out there. He's got a blog that is certainly read by many on the what would be perceived as the far right in the Republican Party, and they've made no bones about the fact that a lot of these folks they don't like, and when they don't like them, they tend to be hostile in their point of view on it. And I think in the instance of Representative Kennedy, what we have is here's someone who was involved in races by his own admission that defeated some of their very very best stalwarts in that that group. And so there's bad blood there. And so I think you have to, even though these allegations, I mean, he's making them, and whatever he's brought forward and given to the investigators remains to be seen. But I think we have to look at this, at least at the outset, as being political, you know, political bad blood.
Ryan.
Well, yeah, we are a long ways away from anybody being able to point a finger at Representative Kennedy right now. I mean, I think that it says something about the way that the House is operating right now, that they, even somebody from like Al Gearhart, who doesn't apparently have any evidence whatsoever right now that he's put forward other than just the allegations themselves, that the House has nevertheless said, you know, we're going to investigate this. I mean, that probably wouldn't have happened 2 or 3 years ago. And so, you know, 2019 Oklahoma House of Representatives, they get these allegations against a member, one of the most powerful members in the legislature, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. And they said, we're going to investigate this. We're going to take a look at it. I think Neva's right. I mean, if you look at Representative Kennedy, he was, you know, critical to the effort to remove kind of the Tea Party, the remnants of the Tea Party wing from the Oklahoma legislature this last election cycle. So there's some motive there on Al Gearhart's part. And, you know, I think that, you know, Gearhart himself hasn't demonstrated that he's the most credible of people. And so, you know, to look at these claims, I think, you know, we're at a time right now where any claim like this, you know, we need to investigate it. And we shouldn't just, you know, brush it under the rug. But I think that until there's something more here, I think we should look at it with an eye towards where it's coming from and what the motivations may very well be.
I do agree with you, Ryan, that I think making this kind of active attempt and move on the part of the House leadership to take care of this in a very orderly fashion right up front, rather than let it linger on. Because frankly, as these things happen, I mean, you begin to hear this stir, you begin to hear this rumble and these accusations being made, you know, whispered around the Capitol, and it becomes very divisive. It becomes a distraction. And I think to be able to handle it in the way they did is a good formula for the future.
Mm-hmm.
A state senator and former teacher tells Governor Sitz she won't carry his nominees for State Board of Education. Carrie Hicks says she opposes Estella Hernandez and Jennifer Moniz because of their views on school vouchers and overriding local school boards. Ryan, will this have any impact on stopping the nominations moving forward in the Senate?
And, you know, I think it may ultimately, because, you know, none of these nominations are a guaranteed thing. I mean, it may mean that either Hernandez or Moniz may not make it. You know, so I think that the chances that at least one of them makes it through the confirmation process is really high. I think that, you know, that this may, you know, mean that there's some problem with getting both of them. But, you know, I do look at, you know, where you've got Senator Hicks. Here's somebody who probably knows more about where the rubber meets the road in education than anybody in the legislature right now. I mean, she's right out of the classroom, right into the Senate chamber, and, you know, ran as an educator. And I do think that some of the hits against her, because she's carried, you know, I think over a dozen of the governor's nominations at this point.
And she's carried others.
And so when she decided not to carry these, you know, the governor's office is, you know, coloring this as partisan, you know, that this is just partisan politics and that she doesn't have a real reason. Well, she said she has a real reason. She said that, you know, she doesn't like the way that they look at vouchers, that she doesn't like the way that they look at funding for education. And she said, there's just some disagreement here that I can't reconcile. I'm not going to carry it. Probably won't vote for him. But then to kind of reflexively say, well, this is just partisanship. I think that, you know, looking at, you know, somebody like Tim Downing, we were talking about him earlier with criminal justice reform. My opposition to him being in the room isn't that he's a Republican. Frankly, some of the biggest champions for criminal justice reform this legislative session are Republicans. Roger Thompson, Senator Bice.
Some of your biggest opponents have been Democrats.
I mean, so you look at folks that have really stepped up. To just say that this is partisanship, I think, doesn't hold a whole lot of water.
Neva?
Well, I think there is a procedure, and clearly, even though Senator Hicks has chosen not to move the nominations forward, there will be a process, I think, where whether it's Pro Tem Treat or whether it's Senator Stanislavski, the Education Committee Chair, or whomever it turns out to be, these nominations will be advanced, and I think there's every expectation that given their resumes and given their real strong positioning to serve in this capacity, that they will likely be approved by the committee and move forward for confirmation. So to say that senators, regardless of party, if they have issues with any nominee, I mean, this is the part of that vetting process and why it is put in place that there is Senate confirmations for these higher level appointees that serve in very key responsible boards and commissions where we want to know, you know, what their background is, and frankly, elected folks want to know what their views and ideas are on subjects. They may not agree with all of them, but this is the process that we're going through. So I think ultimately it's a healthy process. And you know, it goes back to, you know, I can remember the day back, you know, in 1995 when Governor Keating, you know, advanced Linda Murphy to be the Secretary of Education. I mean, you had a Democrat-controlled legislature. You had a 12-5 vote against her in the Senate Education Committee. She ultimately was not confirmed to be the education secretary to the Republican governor. So, you know, we have occasionally these exchanges, and now I think in this instance, we're just seeing it play out in a little different fashion with Senator Hicks and these nominees.
And just to give our listeners some context of how these things work, the reason that Senator Hicks was asked to carry this is that kind of the tradition, I don't think it's written down anywhere, but the tradition is that if the person that you're nominating lives in that senator's district, that senator mm-hmm. That represents the nominee advances the nomination in the event that they want to, and right. then they get to right. decline if they don't. And right. so, and that's just kind of, that's why Senator Hicks has carried so many. I mean, she represents a metropolitan area. There's a lot of appointees are coming from that
and
area.
And frankly, in the past, there have been instances where when someone was vetted and the name was put forward and there was opposition, or there clearly were folks that had major issues. In some instances, either the nominee chose to withdraw, or there was some movement behind the scenes to make some other, you know, to take some other action. So it is a process, and I think all in all, it is a healthy, thoughtful process that we've seen come into play again this week.
Well, and the Senate President Pro Tem also said he wants to make sure there's a little bit more vetting than there usually is, which is just
particularly make the a higher statement level at appointments of this level. And I think, as I understand it, next Wednesday the Senate Education Committee will be taking up these nominations. So we'll see next week what ultimately.
And we
happens.
Talk a lot about partisanship and how folks fight, but you know, Senator Tree, the leader of the Senate, you know, he said that he's going to reach out to Senator Hicks before he does anything, and you know, that's just a matter of decorum and collegiality that
that's
I think
right.
you know I think that we think that all of that's gone in that building, but you know, Senator Treat, before he does anything, you know, has committed to talking to Senator Hicks, and you know, he may very well assign it to somebody else or work with the governor's office to get it to assign to somebody else, but he's going to talk to that local senator that represents those nominees first.
The state legislature has exactly 3 weeks left until sine die, and yet there are still no signs of a budget. While it's not unusual to see a plan released in the final week, this year was being portrayed as different with Governor Stitt at the helm. Neva, are you surprised nothing has come out yet?
No, I think from all accounts that the negotiating continues and that they are making positive strides. I think they're much farther down the road than some, you know, suggest or may think, given everything that's being said by folks that are kind of in that process and have been in the room, so to speak. So I think they are trying to keep the process where the give and take on the final sticking points, which there always are two or three. I mean, the Senate's going to have their points, the House are going to have their points, the governor is going to have, you know, issues that he is going to be intractable on to a certain degree, and what they've got to do is finally sort those out and make sure that the numbers, I mean, the budget numbers, finally line up and everybody's on the same page. So I think, let's remember, this is the first time for a lot of folks in this process, and certainly this is the first first time mm-hmm. for Governor Stitt. So I think we're seeing actually a fairly smooth process. There are always going to be hiccups. There are always going to be setbacks and some delays and frustrations, as we talked about at the outset of the program here, that that comes just naturally with this process. It is a give and take. And but I think the level of contention and just the hostility that we've seen in previous sessions certainly is not there, and that continues to be refreshing.
Right.
I mean, we are seeing some personality issues, though, and you know, we're seeing alliances. We've talked a lot this episode about how the legislature and the executive branch have been at odds, but there are allegiances within those branches and the executive branch. And, you know, from what I'm hearing at the Capitol, that the House leadership is in much greater alignment with the governor on where the budget should be than they are with the Senate. And so if you've got the governor and the House locking arms, then you're going to see things like the confirmation hearing of Senator Massey for budget secretary, you know, that going down in flames, well, maybe not going down in flames, but at least on hold right now, because you know that becomes a proxy fight, and you know other bills in addition to the budget become a proxy fight in that negotiation. Senator Treat's transparency and accountability legislation, I think SB1, I mean the premier piece of legislation for the leader of the Oklahoma State Senate, still hasn't moved out of a conference committee yet. You know, the governor now has said that he would sign it if it gets to his desk, but that's not a hey, send this bill to my desk. That's if it gets here, I'll sign it. Yeah. You know, that's different. So, you know, you're going to see, I think, not only with the budget negotiations themselves about the final numbers, but there's going to be some trading that goes back and forth on key pieces of legislation.
And I think the education component on the teacher pay raise, more money into the formula, whether they have some other things inserted into that, that's a point where the House and the Senate all through the session have had differing points mm-hmm. of view, and they still haven't quite come to terms. And the governor, as you say, probably has been, in that instance, maybe perceptually more to the House side in terms of the teacher pay raise and some of those things. But we're just going to have to see where the compromises come in that particular instance, because it is a major sticking point
and
still.
And the governor calling for $200 in the savings account, I don't think either side is really wanting. They kind of realize we need this money to go fund government. We can't just throw it in the savings.
I think he'll hold out for some measure of savings. So the question is, where's the compromise in that number as well?
And how frustrating I've always wondered how frustrating you think it is for a business owner who basically, when he runs his business, he makes a decision, and the decision happens, and that's what happens. It doesn't. No one talks about it. No one goes. That you run government, the government doesn't run like a business. How frustrating do you think this is for someone like Stitt?
Well, I think it's a new process for him. It is something totally different than what he has done in the business world, I'm certain. And learning the personalities and learning the give and take of things that will happen and some things that just won't happen very quickly, I think is where that learning curve comes in. And we have to remember, a lot of his folks that he's put in key positions in his administration come from the private sector, mm-hmm. come from the business community. So they are also on a steep learning curve in a very rapidly moving session coming down to the close here, where everything is focused on the budget and what the final numbers are going to look like.
Well, budget, Senator Treat's transparency bill, and then, you know, a handful of criminal justice reform measures. I mean, there are some really big, high stakes issues that the legislature has in the next few weeks.
Yeah. Well, I think time's running out.
And one of the things that kind of came out of left field was in this conversation in the hearing was whether or not agencies were being told that they might have to take cuts. And, mm-hmm. you know, even though that was pretty quickly tried to put that down, I mean, clearly when you start hearing that kind of conversation, whether it's real or just fabricated, it still has some impact in the total, kind of the whole dynamic of where these discussions are taking place.
And we'll find out as we get closer to sign die on May 31st. Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.